Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, if you're a Royals baseball fan, you've got to be excited about the start of the season, month away from opening day, and things have gotten off to a hot start for the Kansas City Royals here in spring training. Through their first five games, they have won four, lost none, and had a 1-1 tie against the Athletics yesterday. It was weird to look at the box score yesterday and just see Athletics as their whole, like, no city designation, just the Athletics now. So that's going to take some time to adjust to.
But they will be playing in their fourth city as a franchise at this point. Started in Philadelphia, moved to Kansas City, moved to Oakland, now in Sacramento.
And then soon they will be
Vegas? Vegas thing has been a whole ordeal.
Well, the whole thing has been a whole ordeal.
It's crazy that there are two baseball teams this year that don't have hometowns.
Yeah, the Rays, of course, are going to be playing at the Yankees spring training facility because of the damage to, I believe is it Tropicana Field?
Yeah,
still?
Which, according to Vinny Pasquantino, is one of the nicer facilities because I guess he played there back in like high school or college or something like that. He played some games there, so at least there's a chance that stadium's going to be nicer than the stadium they're playing in Sacramento.
I would assume so, right, yeah. They're finishing up repairs or getting repairs started on the stadium in St. Petersburg after the hurricanes that devastated the area last year. But the Kansas City Royals today got a huge win, a 15-6 victory against the Texas Rangers. But yesterday on the program, we had a chance to visit with Jalen Thompson. He is a beat writer for the Royals with the Kansas City Star. And we talked about the beginning of the spring training slate, how things have gone so far, what have been some of his biggest observations of this team since pitchers and catchers reported, and what are some of his expectations going into next year. This pretty long interview here, so sit back, relax, and enjoy a little Royals talk here to get things started here in hour number three. I kind of want to get your instant reaction to today's ball game first, a 1-1 tie, pitching for the Royals. You know, three of these four games has been very, very impressive, kind of top to bottom. Take us through what you saw today at the ballpark.
Yeah, the Royals, they got a lot of their guys, a lot of NRIs, non-roster invites in the game today just to see how they would perform. But they did have Cole Reagans be on the mound. So it was his first start of the spring. He looked pretty good. He threw two innings. And, you know, for him, it was all about getting his arm built back up, getting prepared for what's the season ahead to come. You know, he's a guy they're going to be counting on a lot this year. We saw he finished fourth in the Cy Young voting in 2024. So it's a lot of ways for him to go up from here. So he got his first belt, start earning the belt in Cactus League play, and he's ready to go from there.
It seemed like he got off to a fast start. You know, you look at his fastball numbers in this one, hitting 97, 98 with some regularity. He seems to be already off to a hot start, at least in terms of his velocity on that fastball already this season.
Yeah. He mentioned that was a focus of his today, and really throughout the offseason, is continuing to maintain that velocity. Helps with his command. It helps him stay in the zone. And we know what he can do with his secondary pitches as well. So for him, it's going to be just continuing to pound the zone early and getting those favorable counts, because when he's in those favorable counts, he's a tough pitcher to kind of compete against and also try to hit.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned a lot of non-roster invite guys that were in the lineup today or were pinch hitters at points in this game. Kevon Biggio had a big day today, 2-for-3. He scored the only run of the game for Kansas City on a solo homer. He's a guy that I'm not sure many are thinking much of, at least as a guy on that 25-man roster to begin this season. What did you make of his performance today, and what have you seen from him throughout spring training so far?
Yeah, Kevon Biggio, and it took me a minute to learn it was Kevin.
Interesting.
I like everyone else. But Kevin, he's a guy where the Royals really like what he can bring to the table. He's versatile. He's someone that, as you saw, he played first base today. He can play all over the field. He's a left-handed hitting infielder. And the Royals mentioned that they want to find a versatile defender that can hit as a left-hander this offseason, and he's a guy that they kind of brought in to fill that type of role. He's a super utility guy. He's kind of competing with Harold Castro, who can also do the same thing in that super utility role, Nick Lofton as well. The Royals have a lot of decisions that they want to make moving into later on in the spring, and whether they want to keep a guy that can play a super utility role. A lot of it's going to depend on how they look at the outfield with Jonathan India and Michael Massey in left field. So getting a guy like Kevin Biggio in here that has MLB experience, was finished fifth in the Rookie of the Year voting in 2019. He's someone that, if he can turn it around, he knows how to go out there and play baseball. So that's something that they like about him.
Another guy that, yeah, I think has been kind of impressive here at spring training thus far has been Carter Jensen. Had a couple of big knocks earlier in the weekend. Today he pinch hits and he gets a stolen base, a couple of walks drawn in this game. He's done a little bit of everything here to get things kicked off for the Royals in spring training at just 21 years old.
Yeah, Carter Jensen is a guy that, local KC kid. He's always been around the program. He's always been on the radar for a long time. I remember. He came after the minor league season at the end of last year, and he participated in BP at Kauffman Stadium. He's someone that the Royals really, really like. He has the power element. He has the ability to really grow and develop as a catcher in their system. And what makes Carter Jensen really great, and as far as what coaches really are impressed about with him, is his ability to learn, his ability to listen and get better. He works a lot with fellow Royals first-round pick Jack Caglione. I'm sure we'll get to him in a minute, but they are great friends. They love to just be around each other. They ask each other questions. They bounce ideas off of each other. They play together in the Arizona Fall League. So, yeah, both of those guys really are looking to take the next step. And for Carter to hit that home run yesterday, it's a big thing for him and his confidence.
Yeah, and you mentioned the other guy on the other side of that coin, and that is Jack Caglione. We got a chance to see him for the first time over the weekend. He hits a absolute moonshot, a 435-foot bomb to right field earlier this week. I know that people are incredibly excited about him. He's the number six prospect in baseball. They have every right to be excited. But would you agree that maybe we should tamper down the expectations about him potentially being a part of this roster at any point this season? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that we got to recognize, and a lot of fans have to know, that this is his first full year in professional baseball. He played 3 years at Florida, and the numbers are great. Everyone sees the power, and it's easy to get caught up in the emotions of wanting to see him make his debut early. But you got to give him time to develop. You got to give him time to learn the game. A lot of about playing in the Major League Baseball is adjusting the pitchers and adjusting to things that you see. Caglione said it best. He's playing at 100 miles per hour right now. And the Royals coaches and everyone is trying to get him to, you know, compartmentalize, slow it down, think through the game, you know, focus on one zone and wait for your pitch. Because when you can do that, then you are able to, you know, drive the ball more and it really make an impact for your team. But for him, It's easy to get excited. He's a first-round pick. He's seen the home run, you know, 115.4 exit velocity on his home run yesterday, 435 feet. I mean, it's cool. It's exciting. Everybody wants to see that. But I think for him, it's going to be a matter of waiting till 2025, let him get a full year in the minor leagues, and then go from there. And then it could be 2026, depending on how he performs. But I think that he's a guy that you have to really just let him grow into his MLB preparedness and in the minor leagues so he can get there to be where everything you want him to be.
His timetable is going to be one of great interest to Royals fans, certainly. I'm curious, from your perspective, as somebody who's covered this team for a couple of years on a day-to-day basis, what is his position at the major league level going to look like? There's a lot of conversation about that right now with Vinny Pasquantino at first base. Do the Royals move on from Vinny, or do they make him a DH, or does Jack go to potentially, you know, a left or right field sort of position so that you can have the possibility of both of them out there in the field day to day here in a year or two?
Yeah, I think if you really look at what the Royals kind of want to do with Jack Caglione, they have Vinny Pasquantino at first base, and he's a big part of their future, their current and their future. So they want to keep him at that position. So when you look at Caglione, it might have to be something where he does go out and maybe learn the outfield. Maybe he gets an opportunity to operate in there in the minor leagues and see how he takes to that. The most important thing, though, is when you have a guy that can hit like he can, a manager will tell you that you just want the bat in the lineup. You'll figure out everything else after that. So if the Royals see that Caglione is progressing well and he's hitting minor league pitching the way that they probably expect him to or want him to, then they will make that decision as far as where does he play. Because there's certain ways you can get it done. You could put him at DH. You can move maybe Salvi and Vinny could it down the line work as a DH. And, you know, there's a lot of ways you can do it. But for right now, they just want the kid to go through the minor league system and continue his career. But they do have all options on the table as far as him potentially working in the outfield, if that's something he learns in the minor leagues, or, you know, other ways to make the team better.
We talk a lot about spring training, and rightfully so, but there's always that thought of, okay, let's not overreact or underreact to anything that we're seeing here, talking about how Caglione has performed and Carter Jensen, and that's all well and good, although they may not be ready. Another sort of, you know, try to tamper down an overreaction would be the struggles for MJ Melendez to kick off this spring training, right? He's only gotten 6 plate appearances, 5 at-bats, but he's 0-for-5, and he's got 4 strikeouts in those 5 at-bats. What do you make of the start of this season for him as a guy who had a lot of following going into this season? He had the change in his batting stance and his swing. Seems like he's gotten off to a bit of a slow start here in what could be a make-or-break year for MJ Melendez.
Yeah, you got to tailor the expectations of him just jumping out and setting the world on fire in spring training. He's, like you said, he's only had 5 at-bats, so he can easily turn around. A lot of these guys, they just need to get their timing down. And once you get your timing down, then now you'll see them get stronger and more proficient as spring training comes along. That's why they play so many games in the Grapefruit and Cactus League. A lot of it's for the pitchers to get their timing and build up, but it's also for hitters to get their timing down, too. MJ Melendez worked extremely hard in wanting to simplify his swing and be able to make the necessary changes to be a successful player. I talked to him, and he said, I didn't play well last season. He knows that he had to get better. He had to perform the way that the Royals need to perform to contribute, because he's the type of bat that if he's going, and we've seen it in flashes, Boston Red Sox to be an example. If he can bottle all that up and be more consistent, they have something in him. And it's not too long ago they hit 40 home runs in the minor leagues. So if he can get back to that form, then maybe he can be that middle of the order bat that they so desperately look for this offseason. But it's going to be on him to make those adjustments and continue to make those adjustments, because the game of baseball is never quite figured out. You make an adjustment, the pitcher makes an adjustment to you, and it's just a game of that. But he has a lot of skill sets that the Royals like and they covet, so it's going to be on him to put it all together.
In Kansas City Royals spring training baseball here tonight on After Hours, Logan Weber alongside Chris Unocero, and on the line with us right now is Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star. We've been talking a lot about the position players on this Royals team to begin the year, but I want to kind of change things over onto the pitching side really quickly. A lot has been made of who that number 5 starter is going to be. We've heard from Matt Quatrero. We've heard from JJ Piccolo about the thought process of Chris Bubich being that number 5 starter. Jalen, you've been down in Arizona covering this team throughout spring training. Would you agree that that's probably the common sentiment around the clubhouse right now, is that Bubich is going to be that number 5 starter? And if so, what have you seen from his performance so far?
Yeah, I would say that Bubich is definitely a front runner for that number 5 starter. But there's a lot that can still be determined. You have Alec Marsh that's still building up. He's going to be in the mix. Right now he's dealing with a right shoulder tightness and soreness, but he just threw a bullpen today and he's working his way back to form. You got to look at Kyle Wright, was another guy that is still in the mix as well. He dealt with a hamstring injury, and you know, he's coming back from right shoulder surgery himself. So both of those guys are ones to kind of watch as they move forward as far as who's going to be in that fifth star spot to compete alongside Chris Bubich. But the Royals, they made it a point to make Bubich a starter this offseason after he pitched so well out of the bullpen. So they know what he can do. They know what type of ability he can do. And he was in the starting rotation before he got injured with Tommy John surgery in the 2023 season. So there's definitely the mentality that he has to be a starter is there, and he's worked and he's built that up this offseason. So it's not a surprise to see him thriving right now as he works to push for that fifth starter spot.
So we've seen Bubich pitch. We've seen Reagan's pitch. So seemingly we've seen the probable one and five starters in this rotation. We haven't seen the trio of Seth Lugo, Michael Wacha, or Michael Lorenzen. And, you know, there has been conversation during the offseason, especially with Lugo and Wacha. The fear of a possible regression with those two guys who are now a year older, they're deeper into their 30s than they were last season. What have you seen from those two guys ever since pitchers and catchers reported and how they've performed here outside of an actual spring training game to begin the season?
Yeah, I think for Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha, they are vets for a reason, and they know how to take care of their body, and they know how to, you know, get themselves ready for when the regular season comes together. The Royals, they make no qualms about it. They know that they need multiple pitchers built up because last year they were remarkably healthy. They had a lot of guys that made over 25 starts, you know. So that's not always going to be the case moving forward. You're going to have guys that are going to get hurt. There's going to be injuries here and there. That's just the nature of baseball and playing 162 games. So when you look at Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha, the key for them is just to keep their bodies healthy, keep their bodies right, and be prepared for when the season kicks off on March 27th against the Cleveland Guardians at Kauffman Stadium. But for them, they're getting their bullpens in, they're getting their arms built up, and you'll see them get more and more into game action. And as the Cataclysm play goes on, you've seen them in live BPs. They look great, they look strong, they look well. So I think that for the Royals, it's just about keeping them healthy and getting them to the starting line. You get them to the starting line, then you allow them to do their thing and they go off, you know?
And, you know, talking about keeping guys healthy, Michael Lorenzen, who, of course, was a trade deadline acquisition by the Royals from the Rangers and got off to a hot start when he arrived in Kansas City. And then ultimately the injury bug became a factor and it wound up with him being kind of left off of the rotation for the Royals in the postseason. What have you seen from him so far as spring training has gotten underway through bullpen sessions and whatnot, as he tries to get himself ready to go after missing a good chunk of last year with the Royals because of that injury?
Yeah, with Michael Lorenzen, you know, he's working his way back. There was a flu bug that went around the clubhouse, and, you know, he was one of the guys that had gotten sick. So he's getting himself back, getting back up to speed, getting back, you know, into game action again, you know. And with Lorenzen, he's a guy that the Royals really believe in, that they want to bring back. You look at what he did in those five or six games that he appeared with the Royals. He had a 1.57 ERA. He was someone that really, really impressed the front office and the coaching staff with his ability to just pitch wherever he's needed. And this year, the Royals are going to start with him in the rotation as that number four. And for him, it's all about, you know, regaining the same form that he had in 2024 and helping the Royals kind of stabilize the back end of that starting rotation. We know what the first three can do with Reagans, Lugo, and Wacha. And if Lorenzen can pitch the same way he's pitched when he came over to Kansas City, that's a fearsome four that you have in that starting rotation. And you'll need that when you are playing against American League teams, especially in that AL Central, where you have the Detroit Tigers, the Cleveland Guardians, the Minnesota Twins. They're all going to be competing for that AL Central crown. And then I can't leave out the White Sox. They're rebuilding too, but they can be a tough out as well if they get that thing turned around.
Final question I've got for you, Jalen, is the interesting dynamic of spring training down in Arizona this year for the Royals, right? Last year, you're coming off of a 106 loss season. Expectations are at a real low for this organization. And you go out and you win 86 games and you kind of shock everybody. You win a first round series in the wild card and you take the Yankees to a game four in the ALDS. What is the feeling for you around the clubhouse down in Arizona right now with this team, knowing what they accomplished that last year and where the expectation has differed from last season to this season down there in Arizona?
Yeah, with the Royals, they know now that they can compete with the other teams in the American League and the other teams in Major League Baseball. You look at last season, there was a lot of optimism that we can be a team that can push for playoff contention. But when you go through that mix of the regular season and you play deep into October and you see what it takes to get to that next level, that's where the Royals are now. Vinny Pasquantino said it best. He says that we got a taste of it last year. Now we want to get more of that taste. Salvador Perez, he says, if you are playing this game of baseball and your mindset is not to get to the World Series, what are you doing it for? You know, that's the mentality. Bobby Wood Jr., the goal is to control what they can control every single day. That's how they're thinking. That's how they're wired. You can tell in how they compete for every drill. You can tell for how they compete on the field. There was in the games that they won, they came back from being down late, and that was with non-roster guys, minor league guys in the lineup, and things of that nature. The competitiveness is sprinkled down throughout the entire organization, and they believe that if they can get off to a good start with their bullpen, which we didn't talk about, but Carlos Estevez, Lucas Erceg, Hunter Harvey, those guys down in the back end, they're strong at shortening the game and handing it over to them to close it out. If they can just play consistently, they can get back to the playoffs, and that's what everybody believes, and they believe they can get over the hump.
That was Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star. He joined us yesterday on the program. Thought it would be nice to replay that interview tonight for you guys. When we come back, Quentin and I are going to talk a little Royals baseball. I know he's a big Royals guy, and he's got some takes that he wants to fire off here as we approach the end of week one of spring training, as we all wait around with bated breath to see what this season will entail. After they had this remarkable run a year ago, can they replicate it? Can they improve upon it? We'll talk a little bit about that when we come back after hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Wow. Going with a deep cut there, are you, Quentin?
You know, it's baseball season.
What's the release date on that? Circa when?
It came out, so 10 years. It came out during the postseason run in either 14 or 15.
Really?
Yeah.
That sounds like it would have come out in like the 70s, 80s, like when the Royals were just getting off their feet as an organization. I mean, that's probably the purpose behind why it sounded that way, but
yeah,
I just figured that would be much older. After hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber alongside my producer for tonight's program, Quentin Morris. Our number, 913-586-7965. You just heard from Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star talking about the beginning of this season for the Royals, and we're going to continue along those lines. I know that Quentin is a big baseball guy, big Royals guy, and he's got some takes that he wants to fire off. So I'll leave the floor to you, Quentin. Let us hear some takes that you've got here, and we'll see if we can make some instant reactions.
My first thing is the Jack Caglione conversation. Like, this is a conversation more for the future, because, you know, this is a guy that's going to start in AA this year, but the fact that he's starting in AA is already just positive. We know that this is one of those two-way players. He was a pitcher for the longest time and then needed Tommy John surgery and then convinced his coach to start hitting and was really good at that. So the Royals, when they drafted him, talked about how they want him to be a hitter moving forward. I think he's the right fielder of the future. I know that Hunter Renfro has caused some issues with the fans and the organization just because of how poor his play has been. There's a reason why he chose his player option to come back here, because he knew he wasn't going to get $8 million, you know, in the free agency market. So I think that Jack Caglione, when he comes up to the Royals in 2 years, I assume, he's going to be the right fielder of the future, because you put your least important defender in right field, and as a guy whose history is pitching, I think that's where he's going to be. So I'm not surprised that the Royals weren't able to find a right fielder, because I think they have the right fielder of the future.
I don't disagree with you. I also think that he's likely to be the right field option. I mean, right now you look at, Vinny Pasquantino's 27, right? 2 years from now, he'll be 29. I think that is well within the possibility of him still in the prime of his career, being a guy that you can rely in, day out in the middle of your lineup. Now, injuries have become somewhat of an issue in Vinny's career, right? He had a great year last year up until the injury. He missed a big chunk of the previous season with an injury. If you have another injury scare with him this year, it no longer becomes a problem. It becomes a trend.
That's true. Him breaking his thumb, like, that's just a freak sports thing, right? Like, that's not an injury-prone person. I don't put that on him just because he caught a ball and the runner ran into him, you know?
Yeah,
and broke
his
thumb. So that I don't really put on him. I'll also say this, that this is, if Vinny replicates what he did last year, like, we were talking about an offense for the Royals that we're going to have 3 100 RBI players. Like, that offense, while it wasn't explosive, and you talked about it in your interview, this was an offense last year that came back late in a lot of games. They were really good at bringing in runners on third base. Vinny Pasquantino tied the Royals' single-season record for sac flies. And if he didn't miss the last, 3 weeks of the year, he probably was going to break that. I mean, he ended the year with 97 RBIs. So I think that this is an offense that's going to look better with the addition of Jonathan India as your leadoff guy. What a lot of people don't know is that he didn't become a second baseman until the major league level. He was a third baseman in college and through the Reds system. He didn't get moved to second base until he made it to the major league, which is a weird thing to do when you've played one position your entire career and then you make it to the hardest level and they're just like, by the way, we're going to change your spot.
Yeah, and I think that is an interesting dynamic in what the Royals may do at third base, is the fact that India does have that background at third. So there could be days where he moves over to third base and Massey plays second at different times. I know there's been mention of talking about Jack Caglione in first base versus right field. If Vinny's your first baseman, which by all intents and purposes he is and should be and hopefully will be for the very, very distant future, Caglione, I think he can only play right field.
Yes, yes.
I mean, there's been some mention made of, he could play third. He doesn't necessarily have the athletic tools that we've seen, right? I mean, athletically speaking, you talk about his fielding numbers, what his measurables come out at. I don't think he's athletic enough to play the hot corner at third. I think if he's going to be out there in the field day to day, he's got to play first or right field. I think those are the only two options available to you for him. And obviously, we know Vinny's not athletic enough to play third base at this level either.
He's also like a top level first baseman defensively.
Yeah,
like we've seen him do the splits at first base, where so he brings value at first base, where I don't know if Jack Caglione defensive wise brings that value. Like, if you just think about the guys that play right field in baseball ever, right? It's guys that you either don't have a designated hitter spot like the National League used to, so you put a guy in right field, or somebody else is DHing and you just put your least valuable defensive guy out in right field. Unless you have the 2014 Royals where your entire team was built off of defense and bullpen, you put a less defensive mindedly player out in right field because you don't need to make hot throws to home plate. You aren't looking to gun guys out. You're just making sure that you don't mess up when you're out in right field.
Okay, so What's your next option here? I'll give you a second to think about it, because we had some messages here in the text line that I want to answer in regards to the Royals. Someone says, do the Royals have an opener on the roster this year? I'm assuming that means
like a leadoff batter?
Like a leadoff batter that's going to be Jonathan India.
It's India. I think that's the reason they grabbed him.
Yeah, if you're talking about an ace, then you're talking about obviously Cole Reagans.
I mean,
so maybe I'm misunderstanding the question. If you could send in another message, kind of word it differently, 913-586-7965. Same person says, could we see a six-man rotation to start the year?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I think every indication is pointing to Chris Bubich being the number five starter.
You know what's really interesting about him? Is I think he brings a lot of value in the bullpen.
I agree with you.
And I think putting him in the bullpen, and whether you have whatever, you know, guy, Alec Marsh, whatever guy that you want to talk about as your fifth starter, I think if you put Bubich in the bullpen, he has a great fastball and he has a great slider. If you're able to bring him up and say, hey, let's add a couple of miles an hour on your fastball, which happens in the bullpen, because you're not trying to, you know, you're not trying to run a marathon. You're running a sprint when you're pulled out of the bullpen. When he's come out of the bullpen, he's been really effective. So I'm almost interested to see that, hey, let's bring him into the bullpen, because I think the bullpen is going to be really good this year. People forget the Royals added Hunter Harvey onto this bullpen late last year, and he had a year and a half left on that contract. He's going to be back. Remember, he got hurt in like the second game he played for the Royals. It was that stint where the Royals lost like three pitchers, bullpen guys, back to back to back. He's going to be back. He's not going to be gassed, because the Washington Nationals burned him out for the first few months of the year. So when they got Hunter Harvey, he was gassed at that point. You're bringing him back. He has strikeout capability. I mean, this bullpen is not going to be a liability the way that it was last year, especially early in the season. I mean, we lost like three games to Baltimore early in the year from Will Smith alone. So this is going to be a really good back end of the bullpen, and I think you should continue to add to that strength. And so if I'm making my starting rotation maybe a little bit weaker, probably a little bit weaker, but I'm bringing in Bubich, who I can use way more often. I can use him on back-to-back days because he's used to being a starter, you know, to pitch six innings. So I can bring him in back-to-back days to pitch one inning at a time. I think that that's probably the play.
Another 913 in the text line just asked, do you see the Royals trading for a bat? And the short answer is yes.
Is that before the season starts or like in the middle of the year?
That's where I'm going with this. Yes, but okay. If you're talking about before opening day, no. If you're talking about in May, no. At the deadline, I think it's very, very possible because of where the Royals could be, right? At a certain point, you kind of have to be like, okay, we're in a position to win now. Let's try to win now, which they did a little bit of at the deadline last year, right? That's why you went and got Lucas Ersig. That's why you went and got Michael Lorenzen. They tried some things in terms of bats, but it didn't all work. I think that they could very much go look for an outfield bat, especially if you still have this sort of platoon and revolving door in right field and nobody's able to really lock it down with their bat. And again, I mentioned it with Jalen. Spring training is not the time to overreact to anything.
No, good or bad.
So let's not overreact to what we're seeing from MJ Melendez to kick off spring training. But he's gotten off to an incredibly slow start. If he continues to struggle and he's hovering around the Mendoza line in June and July, then yeah, you may take a swing, pun intended, at a left-handed or left field bat to try to boost this bullpen, right? Bolster this lineup a little bit more as you head into August and September to try to push for a playoff berth. I absolutely think it's possible. What time they do it is interesting, though.
I think an interesting trade candidate is Nick Prado, who's the AAA first baseman for the Royals. He's kind of locked in spot, right? Vinny's here. Vinny's staying. We just talked about, is Jack Caglione, you know, one of those first basemen? We know the Royals like to use Salvador Perez every once in a while as a first baseman. So you've got Nick Prado, who's been sitting in AAA, who's kind of just stuck and nowhere to go. So I think that he's one of those guys that an organization who doesn't have a first baseman but needs a guy to play, that would be an interesting guy to see shipped off for some prospects back, or another like quad four guy, maybe a bullpen arm. I think that's one of the guys that you could see the Royals shipping out right around the trade deadline, maybe in a package deal, but that's a name that I think the Royals can get value back in.
Well, I agree in terms of Nick Prado. I'm also fascinated to see what happens with the catcher position in terms of your prospects, right? Salvi's not getting any younger. I understand that. He you know, his career will end in the very, you know, in the next few seasons, presumably. I like Freddie Fermin. I think he provides you with a lot of great defense, and he's a solid bat at catcher. But two of your top three prospects are catchers. You've got Carter Jensen and Blake Mitchell.
And Blake Mitchell, the Royals talk about a lot.
Yeah. So I know that he's a local guy, and I know that he's had a great spring training, but could Carter Jensen be a trade piece?
And
you can't have two catchers on the field at the same time.
Yeah.
And neither one of those guys has a ton of experience outside of catching. And we've seen kind of what happens when you try to take a guy who's a primary catcher and make him into something he isn't, a la what we've seen from MJ Melendez in left field for the last 3 years.
And catchers, the value from them, unlike every other position on the diamond outside of pitcher, their value is defensively. It's like backup quarterback, right? Being a solid defensive catcher, a guy that can just go out there and catch the ball, is a lot of value for a team. And so teams will just get catchers even if they don't bring a ton of offensive value. And so with you having, the Royals have four catchers, right? One of those guys is sort of stuck like Prado is. And so one of those guys will bring value back, especially the younger they are, because organizations say, oh, we kind of like what he is here. We can fix him.
Yeah, and there's other options at your disposal, right? Noah Cameron, who pitched between AA and AAA last year, he's sort of on the outside looking in. He's 25 years old, right? You've got a ton of young pitching prospects that are already ahead of him in terms of your rankings and your system. Blake Walters and I can't imagine I'm pronouncing this right. Is it Ben Caderna? I believe I'm pronouncing that right. Maybe I'm not. David Shields is a guy you just drafted who a lot of people are incredibly high on, who many thought was going to be like a top five pick in next year's draft. And the Royals took a chance on him out of high school. So maybe a guy like him is an option. I don't know. I don't think you've gotten what you were hoping for out of Gavin Cross yet. I mean, he's only 23 years old. Maybe he's a guy that could become one of those corner outfielders for the Royals. I don't know. I think they've got some play within their minor league system to go after an immediate bat that could help them at the big league level. It's going to be fascinating to see.
Yeah, one last point here before we go to break. I still think this is MJ Melendez make or break year.
Agreed.
Which is if he can... He's fine defense. He's actually made some great defensive plays last year. He's one of the reasons why the Royals were like 16% or 16 outs above average last year, and they had one of the better defensive teams, is because of him playing left field. Guy's got a heck of an arm. If he can just get on base a little bit more, limit those strikeouts, I think that he is a solid guy that you can have for the future of your franchise. He proved that he can play left field, which he was a catcher. Like, that's a significant move. From one, you're talking about going as far away from catcher as you possibly can, going and playing in the outfield. So I give him a lot of credit for that. This is his year to focus on his hitting, and if he can figure it out, he has a major league career here, because if you look at his advanced analytics, which I know frustrates a lot of people, but when he hits the bat or when he hits the ball, he hits it hard and he hits it in the right spot. So I am still a believer in MJ Melendez, but this is his make or break year.
No question. Yeah, you talk about hard hit outs. I think him and Vinny Pasquantino were two of the major league's leaders.
Yeah, they were the unlucky, two of the most unlucky players.
Yeah, I mean, hard hits for outs. He was among the league's leaders in that category. And you're right? Nobody's expecting, at least no rational fan should be expecting MJ Melendez to be a guy who's hitting 280, 290, 30 homers, 100 RBIs. That shouldn't be what you're looking at. I look at MJ Melendez as a guy who, if he hits 240 and he's got an on-base percentage at 330, where you're getting on an average of every third at bat, right? Once a game, you're getting on base, whether it is with your bat or with your plate discipline, that is great, right? More times on base, you know, better pitches that will come your way. He's a guy that has hovered close to 20 home runs, right? He's hit 18, 16, and 17 in his three seasons. If he can become a guy who hits 20 bombs a year, he drives in 65, 70 plus runs, as many as 80 are. Nobody's asking him to be an all-star in left field.
He doesn't need to be.
You're asking him to be a reliable piece, a guy that you can, when you see him in the lineup hitting fifth or sixth, which is the, I would imagine is the hope for him at some point in his career, to be like, okay, I think we'll be okay. If you can get him in a position where he's hitting 240, 250, he's getting on base a third of the time, he's hitting 20 home runs, you can place him fifth in that order with Salvi hitting cleanup, Vinny hitting third, Bobby hitting second, and you've got Jonathan India hitting in the leadoff spot, and that's a solid 1-5.
And
that should be the hope.
And in Kauffman Stadium, he can hit a lot of doubles. And more importantly, if he hits the ball hard, line drives is what gets guys from second home. And I think that with all the guys that we talked about in front of him, there's going to be a lot of RBI opportunities with the addition of Jonathan India. The Royals had the worst of all of the playoff teams. They had the worst leadoff batter in all of baseball. You upgraded that. This offense should be better.
No question about it. 913-586-7965. We got a couple of text messages in our text line that we will answer when we come back. You're listening to After Hours, Logan Weber, alongside my producer, Quentin Morris, here on 96.5 The Fan. As a member of the media, I really like to pride myself on being kind of locked into the details, the nitty gritty of certain things. But there's always those things that, like, I just blatantly forget about all the time. And we were talking, you know, talking Royals baseball here in the final hour of After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. And we were talking about Jack Caglione, Vinny Pasquantino. What will the Royals do with those two guys once Jack makes his MLB debut? It will not be this season. I hate to dampen the mood for everyone, folks. I think at the absolute earliest, maybe opening day of next year. But I think that is a very, very difficult thing to ask for a guy who has literally only played like 30 games of minor league baseball to this point. So we were talking about what you could do with that, right? And I had heard people mention moving Jack to third base, but I'm like, I'm just not sure he's more athletic than Vinny, I would say. But I don't think he's athletic enough to play third. Somebody makes mention of the fact that Jack Caglione's left-handed. Yes, I'm an idiot. Jack Caglione's a lefty. He can't play third base. Or should I say Major League Baseball won't allow it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not just Major League Baseball. I myself am left-handed. And growing up, this is a weird one. I'm sure this is going to shock you, Quentin. I played second base.
Really?
From T-ball up to high school. I played second base as a left-handed person. Entirely left-handed. I'm so left-handed that my computer teacher threatened to fail me in middle school because I kept moving the mouse from the right side of the computer to the left and using my left hand for the mouse. And she's like, stop doing that. Put it on the right side of the computer or I'll fail you. All right. So that's how left-handed I am. And I played second base until I got into high school. And my coach is like, you're left-handed. You can't play second base. Coach, I've done it my entire life. He's like, no, you can't play second base. You got to go try out left field. Because I was a pretty fast and athletic kid, and they're like, go play left field. I'd never played the outfield before. Could not judge a fly ball to save my life. So I think he could do it.
You know what's funny?
They won't let him do it.
I played first base all the way up through my baseball career. Now, I've always been taller than most people, so I was being left-handed and being able to stretch to catch the ball is a pretty big advantage to playing first base. But I always enjoyed like shagging fly balls. That was one of my, when we were doing like warm-ups and stuff, that was one of my favorite things to do in our pre like warm-up was going out and catching fly balls with the outfielders. So I never got that opportunity because I always played first base.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm 5'9".
I'm 6'4".
Yeah,
so
even if I wanted, even as a lefty, it's like, oh, you're left-handed, play first base. I'm 5'9". wasn't going to work there either.
I did pitch a little bit, but that didn't last very long.
Yeah. I wasn't a great pitcher. I mean, I was 15 hitting 78 and 79 on my fastball. Literally, I got cut from the baseball team my freshman year of high school because I played second base. They put me in the outfield. I couldn't judge a fly ball. I didn't have pop in my bat. At 14, 15 years old, I was like 5'1". I had barely hit the century mark at 100 pounds. I just didn't have it. But like I was very, very fast. You know, we would do like the first to, you know, home to first drills, and we would have these big long runs and things that we would do. And I would always finish first in those. My coach cut me the only year they did cuts in my high school, my 4 years. And my baseball coach recommended that I go out for track. Like, it's bad enough that I got cut, but then for my coach to be like, have you considered track?
Have you considered this totally other sport that involves that does not involve throwing or hitting anything?
Yeah, that was a tough one for me. I ended up like, I played summer baseball my sophomore year, and my coach is like, hey, we want you to come out for baseball. And I'm like, no, I'm going to go be on the golf team. Didn't make it. I was on the team, but like I only practiced. I didn't go to any of the meets or anything, and none of the competitions. And then I ran track my final 2 years of high school.
It's funny that you mentioned that you're completely left-handed because I bat right-handed.
Oh, interesting. I was like, I batted switch when I was younger because I thought I could. And like, if I hit 300 as a batting left-handed, I hit like maybe 190 righty. Like, I was not a true switch hitter by any stretch of the imagination, but I thought I was. And then eventually, about junior high, I realized, just hit left-handed, dude. Like, you're making this so much harder on yourself.
I didn't realize it, but then I thought about it. Like, when I was in T-ball, you know, and you're just like, everybody goes up to the tee to hit. I just saw everybody else going up to that side, and I just walked up to that side. Like, there was never, hey, are you left-handed? Nobody, that conversation never happened. So I was just taught to hit right-handed, which looking sucks because it would have been much better if I could hit left-handed.
Yeah, fair point. Or, you know, hit right-handed for all those years and then realize you're a lefty and be like, okay, now I'm going to hit.
So thanks, random dad that really screwed me over there.
Yeah, I was the opposite. My dad still to this day believes he was left-handed, and my grandparents refused and just like made him right-handed. Everything they did had everything he did was forced to be right-handed. And so my dad wanted me to be left-handed so bad, and
that you used a computer wrong?
That I ended up becoming so obscenely left-handed I almost failed my 7th grade keyboarding class because of it. It's wild. That same person said, no problem. I'm a Florida Gator fan here in Kansas City, so I'm definitely locked in. Love the show. Well, I appreciate that. Appreciate that. As somebody living in KC with a prospect like Jack Caglione, you've got to be thrilled. You probably were a little bit sad to see Brady Singer go this offseason, but I think it was for the betterment of the team. We all loved Brady and what he provided, and he was a great deal of meme entertainment when there was a weather delay. But
I thought it was a great sign for the organization that they're willing to do that move.
Absolutely.
That gave me so much confidence.
They're bought in, not just fiscally, right? They're spending money. That's no question, but they're making moves to keep this team competitive for the long term and addressing major needs when that may not be a major need somewhere else. They have great pitching. They needed a batter. They needed a leadoff hitter, and they went and got one. And that's absolutely remarkable for them. That'll do it for tonight's program, After Hours, here on 96.5 The Fan. For our producer, Quentin Morris, I'm Logan Weber. I want to thank you guys for joining us. Have a good night. Enjoy the rest of your week. This has been After Hours on 96.5 The Fan.
When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.